Welcome back to our interview, part two. We're talking with Elaine Douglas, and we're trying to find out why there is a committee needed to reform MUFON. She has that committee, and it's been active for about 6 months, maybe a little longer than that. During our first half hour, we received several comments from listeners. Reaction. It has been coming in by email, and it really doesn't seem to be very good for the present MUFON leadership. Let's read a couple of them. People who have sent us emails at jerry@jerrypippin.com. And if you would like to do that and give us your two cents, you're welcome to do that as well. That's jerry@jerrypippin.com. We'll read the emails regardless of how you feel. Here's one from someone in Colorado. I'm not a member of MUFON or any organization. And until all of this business began, I really didn't pay attention much to any of them and who they were. But there really is a preponderance of military people here in MUFON. Even all the way down from the board to the membership, people like Chase and Elaine and many others. I don't know why that is. Also, I never thought about the situation with field investigators. And it was astounded to find out that they have to pay their own expenses. As it has been pointed out, they even have to buy their own equipment, or they can't be a field investigator. So that means it's a fairly elite group, a group that's closed, limited only by your financial ability to belong. It really is a battle, I feel, between the elites and the James Blows and the John Blows and the Jane Blows. In other words, the average members. Here's another one. This is from well-known UFO activist Larry Bryant. Another Murdochian corporalist party power play at the expense of the public interest. Instead of running MUFON as a government agency, current MUFON leadership has been running it as a business. A RICO business at that. Once again, if you have an opinion, send it to us at jerry@jerrypippin.com. Elaine Douglas, welcome back to part two of our show. In part one, you discussed quite a few earth-shattering things about MUFON that you found out over the last 6 months or so. I mean, bribery, missing cases, possible third-party influence. I think you have more, so we might as well get right to it.
According to Richard Lang, told me, Richard Lang is the fellow who was in charge of SCAR Team during the Bigelow contract period in 09.
I've never interviewed him, but I know who he is. He's in the Carolinas.
That's correct. Yeah, maybe you've met him. He's a nice fellow.
Mm-hmm.
He found out that Chuck Reaver, who was the director of investigation that deleted his...
So you were saying he made money off of passing the case on to somebody?
Right. See, we don't know where all these cases... We just can tell you where this one case went.
Well,
it went
when
Chuck deleted it, and it was an important case. It was a case that took place on an Indian reservation, at least according to Richard, that he caused Chuck to admit that he had deleted the case. Now, you know, deletions, we don't think they're really deleted. We think they just seem to be deleted. That's our hypothesis.
So you're saying when someone pushes this delete button, the case doesn't delete, it actually goes somewhere?
That's right. That would be the modality that we would assume is going on here. And we have a printout of that particular case. There's other cases like it that we could mention, but that particular case, we have a printout of it, and the case number's on there. If you go to CMS today and look for that case, it's not there.
Well, you looked at that case. What was so important about it? Was it an important case?
It's a case that took place on an Indian reservation where there was a landing, and the Greys came out and walked around this family's house.
Okay.
So for MUFON, that's a very important case.
Well, that sounds pretty important even if you're not a MUFON.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, why are these cases being removed? what's being done with these cases? Who are they being sent to? You see? Questions, no answers for these questions.
So from what you're saying, it sounds to me like maybe another group, Men in Black or G-Men or somebody shows up at the door of the witnesses of these events before MUFON sometimes. Is that right?
Oh, yes. I can recall a case from, I don't know what period of time. I can recall it. This one actually got published in the MUFON Journal, that prior to MUFON's investigators showing up, somebody else already had their name, the name of the witness, and showed up at their house and interrogated them. And the witness thought it was MUFON. And then when the real MUFON showed up, they said, well, you were already here. What's going on? So we think those are government agents that are doing things like that. And we think it's government agents that went to Florida and torched the ground on this ground trace case. Now, when you talk to James Clarkson, he's going to tell you about a case that his wife had. James Clarkson is the resigned state director of Washington State, where his wife called the witness, and the witness said, we got a call from Bigelow, and they told us not to talk to you. Now, do you want to talk about John Schuessler's security clearance?
Sure. Go ahead. James Carrion brought that up one time, but you can flesh that out for our listeners.
Okay, good. Because we have this matter here of a member of the board of MUFON receiving a security clearance. I'm speaking about John Schuessler. The footnote here is James Carrion told us that, he said in his blog, he said that John told the board that he'd be getting a security clearance.
Well, I always heard that he was on one of the Bigelow Company boards, John Schuessler.
I've heard that, and it's my understanding that he is. I haven't verified it in print or anything.
We tried to verify it, but John never answered my email. He usually is pretty prompt, but not this time.
And James Carrion indicated that a government employee came to him and questioned him about John, the kind of interview that, you know, would be done if somebody was getting a security clearance. And the state director of Colorado, who was fired in January, Leslie Barnicle, she also received a visit from a government employee asking questions about John on behalf of a security clearance. Now, you know, this occurs during the time of the Bigelow contract. So it appears that John receives a clearance in connection with his work on the contract in MUFON. So, you know, why does a member of the board of MUFON need a security clearance? And how come he won't answer questions about it? He wouldn't answer you, Jerry, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, Angelia Joyner called John about it. He said, no comment. So, I mean, another thing about John, we understand he's very close to Robert Bigelow. John is the person on the board of MUFON who knows who Bigelow's unseen backers or unnamed backers were for the contract. You remember that contract was supposed to be up to $500,000 was supposed to go to MUFON. So what ended up going to MUFON was more like a third of a million, but...
Right.
Okay, so there's the contract, and John knows...
Yeah, and Carrion, remember, he said that Bigelow got upset because they hadn't spent all the money. In other words, Bigelow wanted every dime spent. He gave MUFON over $300,000, and he wanted them to spend it on motel rooms and transportation. And maybe he got stimulus money.
Well, who were the unseen backers? And why would John know who they were and couldn't tell the board who they were? I mean, why would that take place? Why would any of this take place in a 501c3 charitable organization dedicated to the betterment of humanity, namely MUFON? Why are all these things taking place that shouldn't be there? You know, and if you look at it from a larger sense, why would the MUFON board form an alliance and open up all of MUFON's information to this powerful, mysterious man, Bigelow, and his unseen backers. His backers might be the CIA, for all we know. You know.
Well, I've heard they are.
Yeah, well, maybe they are.
I don't know that for sure.
Why would our board of directors authorize turning the names of innocent, trusting witnesses who report to MUFON over to a source like that, and a person like that, an operation like that? It should not happen. You know, it just shouldn't happen, Jerry. There's a fellow named Ken Storch, who's a...
Yeah, I know Ken well, and right. Well, not really well, but, I mean, he lives about 60 miles
from
him.
He tells us that he's seen documents which put Bigelow, Robert Bigelow, on the board of two companies, and also on that board was Bobby Ray Inman.
And Bobby Ray Inman, we all know him.
Yes, he's an icon of U.S. intelligence.
Yes.
A very, very big... He's like an angle. Right, so there's Robert Bigelow on the same board with him, you know. So why is MUFON giving Janie Jones, you know, and Sammy Smith's name to this man? Why is he giving their names, addresses, and phone numbers to this man?
Well, I mean, just the idea that Bigelow paid $300,000 to MUFON, that's a lot of money. At least it is to me.
Oh, he has his own operations. You heard that he purchased... Brian Vike is a longtime Canadian...
I know Brian well.
Right. You heard that Robert Bigelow purchased Brian Vike's website and purchased... When you purchase a website, you purchase his reputation. Yes. So where Cliff tells you, why would the U.S. government... Or Robert Bigelow doesn't need MUFON. The U.S. government isn't interested in MUFON. So why would Bigelow purchase Brian Vike's operation? So he purchased MUFON's operation for a while. I shouldn't say purchased, rented, you know. But then we don't know exactly what led to the demise of Bigelow's activities under that contract. You know, if we start talking about that, we'll be on that for a long time. But Bigelow pulled out. Maybe he'd bribed enough people in MUFON that he didn't need to pay anymore. Maybe he just had his own.
I never could figure out why he paid that much money to begin with. I mean, aren't all these cases on the MUFON website?
Well, no. I mean, we said, you know, somebody.
Well, I mean, they didn't start disappearing, did they, until Bigelow came along? Well, maybe that's why he paid the $300,000. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Remember our hypothesis. Somebody would find it very useful to have real-time, immediate information about MUFON's incoming cases. Think about it, Jerry. There could be a UFO crash in the middle of Duluth. I mean, it could happen. And the U.S. government, the people that are supposed to know, they might not know.
My experience is they don't know.
And remember the other part of our hypothesis, that they need to know immediately and in real-time what the public is seeing, and they need to get rid of about 5% of those cases. Now, that 5% number is right off the top of my head. Nobody told it to me. It's just my best guess.
Elaine, you're not the only one that's used that 5% figure, so you may be right
on.
Yeah,
I said to you, this takes more than just hacking MUFON's computer. It takes more than that to get these cases suppressed and get them, you know, handled the way... To get these cases handled just the way the government might want them to be handled takes more than hacking MUFON's computer.
Now, one of the objectives of your committee to reform MUFON is to replace this board of directors, right?
We just want the membership to have the opportunity to elect a board. We don't want a board that elects itself. That's just as simple as that. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the interview you did with Chase Clark?
Sure. It was a very good interview. Chase laid it out the way it is. And, you know, I must tell you, I was upset. Cliff is the one that gave me Chase's name and number. And when I interviewed her, she was pro-Star Team, pro-MUFON, and then a couple of weeks later she quits. I was really puzzled, and I was kind of PO'd. It seemed like I was being used. So I contacted both of them. Clifford said he knew nothing about it.
It's a very interesting interview, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, it's known, Chase calls MUFON a corrupt organization. Those are her words, not mine. But nobody ever knew why Chase quit until you did that interview with her, Jerry.
Clifford said he knew nothing about why she quit. And Chase said she would tell me. And she finally did. And she needs a pat on the back. And I think we need to shake Chuck Maudlin's hand. He's the guy that pushed her over the edge. You think he drinks?
One of the things that Chase brings out in her interview is about the impact of the personality of Marie Malzahn.
You know, I've never communicated with her, but her name keeps coming up. Everybody seems, I guess she could use a little lesson in humility. Everybody, I mean, she really ignites people's emotions. And, you know, Cliff says he's going to name three more interns to be board of directors, probably around the 20th, he told me. That's all we need to have Chuck Maudlin as one of those people. I wouldn't be surprised.
Cliff, when he was on your show the other day, he was so enthusiastic about Marie having a background in the FBI and military police. And I just, you know, I kind of shuddered myself, but Cliff seems to like it. And, you know, a person can say, after listening to Chase describe Marie, and she describes her as being divisive and paranoid. You know, you could listen to that and you could say, well, Chase just had a personality conflict with Marie.
Well, yeah, I've heard that too, but I think there's more to it than that.
Some people would say that Chase just had a personality conflict with Marie. Or, you know, alternatively, you could ask yourself, why is the MUFON board intends to or is considering making Marie Malzahn the next international director? So I recommend people listen to that Chase interview and, you know, just listen to it, make up your own mind what you think based on what. But the most important thing that Chase talked about was this episode with Chuck Maudlin. And he said deputy director of investigations in MUFON, which means he wouldn't report to Marie except that this incident that Chase describes makes it sound like he doesn't report to anybody. Based on what Chase said, she had information about a STAR Team case. She's a STAR Team manager. Naturally, she has information. She has the name and address of the course of the witness, and she has the GSP, the satellite coordinates, giving the exact location of this event. And Chuck Maudlin telephoned her, and he demands this information. Chase says that she's seen Chuck's name, but she hadn't had any contact with him. And whatever the nature of this case was, I believe it was a Washington State case.
Yes, it was. And Chuck, I guess, investigated it. And the final report was it was a helicopter.
Yeah. Well, Chase hadn't assigned investigators to it. They were handling it. She had all the information on it. And I guess she hadn't made it available to the right people in MUFON or hadn't made it available fast enough. But somebody wanted that information and they wanted it now. And so when you listen to Chase's account, it gives you the feeling, it gave me the feeling that there's a team of people operating in MUFON below the surface, that their activities are not intended to be visible. They're supposed to be invisible, and they generally are invisible. That's the feeling I get from what she describes. I don't believe Chase was ever supposed to see this operation, and I don't think she ever would have seen it. Except that she happened to have this information that these people wanted. And
I guess they wanted the information pretty badly. I mean, otherwise, how do you explain Maudlin's behavior, calling up and blowing his cover?
Right. You know, you get the feeling that whoever they are, they had never been frustrated with anything in MUFON's operations up until that moment.
Coming up is the next segment with Elaine Douglas, Part 3. and we'll discuss Chuck Modlin in detail, plus some other personalities at MUFON and some other incidents that are questionable, at least suspicious.